I'm Pave, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
All right, guys, welcome in to Unpaved. I'm Sean Salisbury. You can get me at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter, the Sean Salisbury, as if anybody wants to be me on Instagram. And you can like and subscribe to this show on YouTube. It would be great. And Rumble. Okay, we would love it. And Adam Sager will join me here in a second. Listen, let me read you something real quick. We got a lot to talk about today. The Monday night game, when I say Monday night game, playoff game, turned out like we thought. The Pittsburgh Steelers offense blows, and the Texans defense is dominant. We'll get to that with my guy Adam Sager and me here shortly. All right, let me read you something that's been going haywire, okay? A lady by the name of Lynn Jones, she works for the Jacksonville Free Press and covers the Jacksonville Jaguars. After the game, after their loss, and there's Lynn right there, she said, I just want to tell you, came to her about a question, and she made a statement, not a question, and addressed it to Liam Cohen, the head coach. And she said, I just want to tell you, congratulations on your success, young man. Jones said to Cohen, you hold your head up. All right. There's where the question came. You guys have had a most magnificent season. You did a great job out there today. You just hold your head up. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Duval, you the one. Keep it going. We got another season, okay? Take care and much continued success to you and the entire team. And Cohen respectfully and the only way he could answer by saying, thank you, ma'am. Now, I can jump through the screen and yell and scream. I'm a broadcast. I mean, I graduated from USC in journalism, and that was my major, okay? I'm not a journalist. I'm not a journalist. When Stephen A. Smith is on his show, or Pat McAfee's on his, or Dan Patrick's on his, and now some of you may think we're not entertaining, entertainers, and we all reserve the right for our opinion. I go on here on this show and try to give you insight. We laugh, we joke, but I'm not arrogant enough to say I'm a journalist when I'm talking is hardcore. Now, people that have worked at the New York Times and Wall Street Journal and LA Times, Adam Schefter, Tom Rinaldi, these people who dive deep in, and people who are just working around your local team that are writing every day, beat writers every day, covering, you know, Chandler Rome for the Astros. Those guys are journalists, and they deserve that label. Now, because I graduated the degree in it, but I'm on this show, I'm not. Now, if I say to you, I write an article that's an op-ed, and I'm giving my opinion, or I get hired by the Los Angeles Times to write a column, I'm a journalist. What I do on this show, and if one of those reporters comes on, you ask them questions, Ed Werder has been on the show. Those guys are journalists, and they deserve that respect. I'm not a journalist. I got a background in it, my degree, but as I do this now, I'm not writing hardcore columns or a beat writer. I'm an opinion-giving analyst who looks at situations, talks to coaches, talks to players. So I'm not arrogant enough to tell you. Their job's a lot harder than mine. Journalists. Now, Lynn Jones is a journalist. And you know, you've heard the cheering in the press box for your team. We all do under our breath at times. I mean, Red Sox play, I'm Red Sox. Or if the Raiders play, I'm rooting for them. Although many times I'm rooting, well, here we go again. My point is, are we making too big a deal of this? I'm not saying on either side. I don't believe that you should be, this can't be Lynn Jones' regular approach. And I don't think it is. I don't know her well. at all. I've never met her, but judging from it, she's a journalist. And normally it's asking questions and doing your job and being, you know, to the point where you're not a homer, and or should I say a you got to be fair on both sides. You're asking questions to get to your journalist. You're covering it. This isn't a fanboy or fangirl, fan person, fan guy, fan girl, fan man, fan woman segment. That's not what this is for. But we are so in a post-game press conference after a loss. This isn't shaping the face of journalism, folks. Now, journalism's changed. We all of a sudden think an influencer comes on and is doing golf influence or giving an influence on a product that they're journalists or not. Okay, you got to be able to delineate between the two and distinguish which one is and which one isn't. And that's part of it. I'm not a journalist. Now, in the journalist world, hardcore journalists are going to have a problem with this, what she said. In a complimentary, upbeat thing, that's not her normal job as a journalist, 100%. If she did it every week, the truth is she couldn't come. You get to a point, old school hardcore journalists wouldn't let somebody back in the room that if this was a regular occurrence. I'm going to issue a hall pass just this once. Well, if you do it once, you open up a can of worms. No, it's each individual. You open up a can of worms. I get the integrity of being a fan person as a journalist. I'm not a journalist. I can come on and say I love USC, but I'm still going to do the thing I'm supposed to, but I'm not a journalist. I'm not. I don't write for The Athletic. I'm not a journalist. I am a simple try to entertain and give you some insight that I know and give you some knowledge. Would it be okay to do this on a regular basis? No. Should we say that all journalists that think that she made a mistake, they suck and that none of them are any good? That's not true. This is a one-off. It may have happened somewhere else a long time. This is a one-off. It's a woman who felt compelled at one time as a journalist in the locker room, knowing that she was going to catch some flack for this. She was just kind of being kind. It was the end of the season, and it goes something you'd probably say at the bar over a beer with your buddies at the coach walking, hey, you had a great season. Then your journalist hats off. I get the frustration for true journalists that know what they're doing and have a hard job to do. But let's not go overboard, folks, and in the world with this and say journalism has taken a fall. Well, journalism's taken a fall. Not all journalists, but journalism and honest integrity journalism. See it on your TV, radio every day. People that are journalists really aren't at times. And the good ones will always be journalists. They're not going to root in the press box. They don't care what you think about them. They're not in it for the personality. They're in it to do their job. And I've been around some phenomenal ones. I'm not one of them. I'm talking about the journalists. They got a hard job, man, getting the facts and checking it twice and three times in your sources. This was a case, and I'm not sitting on the fence on this. If it happened again, then you have to take a step back and say, listen, this isn't where you go to be a fan. Buy a ticket, set up there, and you're not in the job, go root for your team. But when you're under the umbrella of the, oh, man, I'm a journalist, then it becomes a problem. And, you know, plenty of people are going to hit hard on Liam Cohen and why they lost. We do it all the time, and that is a job. But maybe I'm wrong on this, but are we really saying the face of journalism, but look at the change. We cannot do this. You hope we don't do it regularly because you're a journalist. But every now and again, somebody jumps up in a press box and cheers because of a big play that they shouldn't. They try to resist it. They don't. And when you say, well, Sean, I hear broadcasters, the local team broadcasters, be homers all the time. They're not doing journalistic work. They're doing what we're doing here, calling a game and doing it. Now, if they're in there writing a story for The Athletic after or some journalistic outlet, then they got to switch. So I've been giving this a lot of thought. I thought, do I go all in and say, man, this is an indictment on journalism? Turn on your friggin' TV every day. Save the deep dive, oh, how dare you, self-righteous bullshit that this is changing. If you're worried about journalism, you better take your ass back five presidents ago and start to worry about how journalism and editing stuff on national TV that you should or shouldn't have. We're complaining more about this than that. Get the fuck out of here. Okay, that's one. But you journalists deserve the respect because you do a job that's far tougher than mine. So I get it. Maybe she made a mistake being fan person that day and did after the game. But are we really going to go down this track of how dare her, never let her back in? And she's unapologetic. And I get it. It's a one-off. We do want to think about how many times in your life you've screwed up or you've cheered, and not even in the journalistic world, just in a world where you say, damn, I went 75 miles an hour today and it was 45 mile an hour speed limit, but I didn't get caught. Oh, well, you broke a law, but you're not going to jail over because you didn't get caught. I think that we got to slow down. This isn't about race, which some journalists out there will let you to believe that they'll criticize. Oh, now I can't criticize. No, this has nothing to do with race or female or male. It has everything to do with you're a journalist and you played fan person as opposed to journalistic integrity. But on the other side, every now and again, with the shit that goes on in this country and the way journalism and influencers and social media, people that go on social media to give you an opinion, that's not journalism. That's not fake journalism. It's the guy's opinion. They do whatever they want. The opinion on this show, I'm sure, is different. Segs may feel different. Bailey and Triple E, I don't care. For me, I normally don't sit on any fence, and I'm not sitting on a fence to play both sides. I'm a guy who's had to do journalistic work before as a reporter when I was at ESPN. This is not journalistic work. I'm giving opinion and trying to entertain. And I know the difference. Those journalism people have a tough go. But a one-off case, you can judge it however you want. If you think it was way wrong and should never be allowed, I get it. But a second, third time, we'd say if it's the same person, we can't do it. But we've already crossed that threshold, guys, on national TV, on journalistic shows with journalistic rights. We see it every day. People asking questions in the White House, writing what they want as opposed to what was said. We see it, I mean, on both sides. Doesn't matter. So for me, Lynn Jones, I applaud you for having the guts to just not make it about how dare you, let's fire the coach, screw you, Jacksonville. And Liam Cohen, good on you for the way you handled it. But Lynn Jones, I guess I would suggest that the next time that you get your one time hall pass. I don't know if we'll all get it, but you get a one time hall pass. On the other side, I don't think it's really that big a deal. And for you journalism people who take your job seriously, you can still take your job seriously and not think that the journalistic world sitting on top of your, because if it's true, and people that have criticized her immensely, and then boom, you go on, you criticize her for doing this, or you don't criticize and somebody criticizes journalism for being bothered by this, and then you go on somebody's show that criticized journalism, and yet you go on there and are still buddying up, then that's a you problem. So can't be selective in that either, because that becomes, ooh, are we trudging on, you know, if a reporter, a journalist goes on and is a regular on my show, and I've ripped journalism inside and out and all of them, and then it still comes on my show and we laugh about it. Well, what message is the journalism person sending to me that, well, I disagree with you, Sean, but hey, it's okay. That was your opinion. What's the difference here? Okay. And I don't proclaim to be one of the great writers of all time on there. I'm not a journalist. So for me, going in, let's bring Segs in. Segs, I don't, listen, I think we're making way too big. The journalistic lines have been crossed a million times. It was a woman who felt compelled. You know what it felt like to me? It felt like Liam Cohen was like family. And after all this, knowing the abuse that was coming down, she hit a mom or a grandma moment, man. I don't know, LJ, she did that. And I'm trying to cut it some slack. I get, though, if you're a journalist, why this would bother you. I do. But this ain't the first time. It happens every day. Turn on your TV. It happens on news. Guys will stand there and look into a teleprompter and tell you shit that you know damn well is a friggin' lie. It happens all the time. So it just, I'm sure Lynn Jones is a hell of a good woman. And her motherly and compassionate instincts kicked in. It was kindness and sincerity and humanity. And if you want to label it a mistake, go ahead. The other side of it, I do get why journalism, because they got a tough job to do. This isn't changing the face of journalism. It's not going to be some court case that we go back and refer to it 70 years later. It's a woman that was happy and compelled to give a little motivational speech and then get back to her journalism job. I get both sides, why you'd be frustrated, the journalists, and on the other side, why people are saying, what's the big deal? And I don't normally sit, but this one, I don't think it's that big a deal. Good journalists are going to do their work. And if she's a good journalist on a regular daily basis, every now and again, people do things, and we see it all the time. People mispronounce and do all that. She made it cognizant. Why should we be mad at somebody whose kindness and whatever it was that kicked in her instincts? It just can't keep happening. You get your hall pass for one. Like, maybe we all deserve a hall pass for one mistake, but some won't even think it's a mistake. It's a compassionate move by her. But I do understand the frustration of journalists, but I also understand that a lot of people have a stick up their ass that aren't as integrity filled as they think they are, and that we're making a big deal over a kind woman just wanting to do something different without making it all about journalism. We probably need more of that in society than kick back into doing your job. I think that we're making way too big a deal of this. respect journalism, but I also respect and hold in high regard, considering where we are in sports and in this country, that kindness, humanity, and goodness once in a while can kind of trump all the bullshit we got going on. I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't. And it ain't changing the face of journalism. If you let it change your face of journalism, then you're just an idiot. That's right. Just how I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and I'm with you 99.9%. Like, it just feels like there's a place and a time. Let's quick actually play the video just so people can get the context of how she said it and with Cohen. So go ahead and roll it.
You, congratulations on your success, young man.
Thank you.
You hold your head up, all right? You guys have had a most magnificent season.
Thank you.
And you did a great job out there today.
Appreciate
so you
it.
Just hold your head up, okay?
Thank
and
you,
ladies
ma'am.
And gentlemen, Duval, you the one, all
Thank
right?
You, ma'am.
You keep it going. We got another season, okay?
I appreciate
Take
it.
Take care and much continued success to you and the entire team.
Thank you, ma'am.
She yeah, played the Homer fan person for so what? Really?
Yeah.
So what?
You could just hear, you know, she was genuine in it and everything, and that's fine. The only thing I would say is just time and place. Like, you could have walked up to him after and said, hey, coach.
That's the mistake, Sakes.
Yeah.
That's where the mistake is. Just you chose the wrong venue to do it. If you just waited till they're in the hallway, put your arm around him. Like, just so people know, Sakes, do you know how many journalists, once you're not on the stage, will come out and say, man, great season.
Yeah.
It's happened throughout people. If they do it, that's how you build relationships with that coach to get information. Well, I get the – trust me, I get it. When journalism saying, man, we can't do this, and she can't do it again because she's already got – but, man, it just felt heartfelt. And at the time, is it really that – have we sat journalism back 25, 35, 60, 100 years?
No, not at all.
The answer is no. It's just not.
Yeah, and this is just, you know, people looking to be pissed off about something, and there's always something to be pissed off about.
But I do get both sides being pissed, though. I mean,
I get it. Yeah.
I do get the people who wanted the kindness to say, what are you making such a big deal of it? Journalism, let's not oversell ourselves. And then on the other side, I do get why journalists who work their ass off to ask tough questions, and Liam Cohen's going to go through flack regardless because they lost, and there's going to be compliments. It's just the chosen place that she decided to do it, and under the platform in the umbrella in which she decided to do it. It could have waited. It didn't. It's not ruining journalism. It's just not at all.
You know who should be pissed? The Pittsburgh Steelers fans, because last night you lose 30-6, and the score isn't indicative of what actually took the actual most part of this game. This game was awful to watch. I mean, these offenses were fucking putrid. I mean, C.J. Stroud, if you think he's a top 20 quarterback in this league right now, I mean, you got to watch him every single week because he's getting worse, it feels like, by the week. 5 fumbles, one interception on a terrible throw. He could have had 2 or 3 other interceptions on the night. I mean, the Texans' defense was as dominant as we said they were going to be, and they've been all season long, why they're the number one defense. But for me, I came out of this game saying there's no way either of these teams could ever compete to win a Super Bowl this season with these offenses because it was awful. Aaron Rodgers was bad. DK Metcalf was a no-show. You said he had to show up. He didn't. What'd he get, 3 straight targets to open the game, and then it was like 1 or 2 others throughout the game. It was just
he awful. Doesn't separate. He's overrated.
Yes.
Sorry to tell you.
I got done watching that game. Like, I turned it off with about – I didn't even see the last defensive touchdown. I turned it off. I'm like, I can't watch any more of this shit. It was just terrible to watch. And they go on to win 30-6, but the Texans really didn't score 30, if you get what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like they scored 10 and won 10-3. That's what it felt like watching that game. What were your takeaways from these offenses and both defenses?
Neither offense is worth the, I mean, right now on a consistent level is worth the powder it takes to blow them to hell and back. Now, the one thing I will say, and good on Nick Caley, committing and not abandoning the run to 30 plus carries and almost 170 yards. And Marks is going to be a hell of a player. Their commitment to the run game, listen, you had a little over 100 yards passing, like 60 yards, less than 200 yards, 170 yards total offense. This ain't about the Texans offense. The Texans offense was miserable for the most part, the entire game, other than their ability to offset some possessions with some really good hard runs by Marks and the attempts. Again, I mean, damn near double the attempts that Green Bay had. It really comes down to this and going in, whether I was on a station in Pittsburgh last week, whether we on this one yesterday, or when I was on with my guy Ricky Cobb on the Ricky Cobb Show, all of them. It's the similar message. The best unit on the field going in was the best unit coming out by a long shot. Hell, I was actually impressed with Pittsburgh Steelers' defense in this game that forced the Texans to look pedestrian. The Texans have a Super Bowl defense that can hoist the trophy. The Texans have a subpar offense that Stroud still isn't getting to that rhythm. Now, you look at the numbers just raw and wake up this morning saying, they weren't half bad.
Yeah.
Yet, when you're watching the game in the context with the naked eye, they've got to get better. They've missed too many opportunities, and there's just not rhythm. Their offense is not good enough to be playing. And I'll tell you what they do. They always win wild card rounds, and they've never won a divisional round game. They don't win divisional round games. So they've got a lot to prove as they move forward. This defense, this is one of those where you say, come on, guys, we do everything. The defense outscored the offense, it felt like, for the most part, with two touchdowns. It felt like, not counting the rest of it, but damn. The defense outscored Pittsburgh. But you lay it on the ground, you throw it the other. Pittsburgh's offense is, at times, an embarrassment without the big play. I don't think Rodgers plays anymore. I think Mike Tomlin should still be the coach, whether he is or not. Mike Tomlin's a hell of a coach. You got to decide on the speech. But last night, the Texans' defense may very well be, I'm talking about Buffalo's offense, Rams' offense, when they're going good, comparable. Everybody's got their moments and their weaknesses. Find me a blatant weakness on the Texans' defense. You can't. I'm not sure the Texans' defense isn't the most consistent, best unit left in the friggin' playoffs. And they got into Pittsburgh. Obviously, it was one of those, damn, it's third quarter. It's still 10-6. Just like we said, take the under. Well, living there, and it was just a fist fight and taking body blows. The Texans are delivering body blows on defense as well as anybody in the league. But you're going to get to a point, you're going to run into somebody who can score, and they're going to get a big play. Can the Texans' offense match it? This the loss by Pittsburgh does not surprise me. They are fortunate to have won the division. They're not that good. They're not overly physical, although they reared their head yesterday defensively. Offensively, they're about as pedestrian as it gets. And going into the playoffs, they were the shittiest offense we had going into the playoffs, statistically or not, even with the eyes and a legendary quarterback. So for me, the Texans' offense is Super Bowl worthy. They can't win the Super Bowl playing average defense, laying the ball on the ground and throwing it to the other team. They lost the turnover battle and still won the game. Why? Because their defense was so much better than everybody else on the field. That is why. And I'm going to tell you one thing they do. If you decide you want to get to the edge and challenge the Texans in the run game, those two corners are going to knock your dick right in the dirt. Very rarely in the course of football are you going to have two pure corners in Stingley and Lassiter that play the run like those two play it. Corners are usually want no contact. When you get to the edge, dude, I'm out. Not this team. And that's another level to this defense. Not a shock. Tomlin, the Steelers, and the Steelers fans deserve better offensively because they are a great fan base. They got their ass kicked offensively last night. They has to be major changes. There's so much overrated not to like about their offense. But I can tell you this, the Texans defense is real. If they just play 75% of their defense, the offense matches 75% of it on offense with production, the Texans are real in the AFC. But their downfall is going to be, if they're not careful, stupid turnover, a field goal instead of a touchdown or a turnover. They've got to play better offensively. We're saying that, and they kicked their ass 30-6 last night, and they are real. But this unit is the best unit maybe left in the playoffs on either side of the ball in their defense. It was an incredible defensive watch. They are phenomenal defensively.
We'll get to the Steelers in just a second, what Mike Tomlin and Aaron Rodgers had to say after the game. But what do you need to see from this Houston offense moving forward? I know Woody Marks came out, ran the ball, you know, over 100 yards, and Kaylee stayed with it. But I think it was easy for Kaylee in this game to stay with the run, because of just how it looked. And you're sitting there saying, like, yeah, my defense ain't, they're not giving up anything tonight. So I can run the ball. I can take clock off. I can do this. And yet there was CJ Stroud still trying to give the ball to the Steelers it felt like damn near every single drive. If it wasn't for Christian Kirk getting open, I don't know how much the Texans would have done offensively, because Nico Collins gets hurt with the concussion. Who knows if he'll be back next week, which would be a huge loss for the Texans. And it that offensive line is still a problem for CJ and the entire offense.
Yeah, well, here's the way I feel about this. And Dustin, to answer a couple of your questions, as we always appreciate you guys, do I think they should give Davis Mills? They're not giving Davis Mills a chance in this playoffs unless he gets hurt. He played really well, good back. This is CJ Stroud's to win or lose. And I thought Mills did exactly what a backup's supposed to do, go in there and play like a starter and win games, help him win games. And he did that, which was a big reason they were able to get into the playoffs. Those three wins in there were huge, especially when they were struggling at the time, and now they're rolling through it. And the other side of it is, and you mentioned about Denver's defense. Oh, I have all the respect in the world for Denver's defense. Great pass rush. But I'm going to tell you right now, I think the Texans' overall defense is better. And they the outside guys had, 27 and a half sacks between them? So they're not exactly far off. One may be better at sacking the quarterback, but I'm going to tell you what, the difference between the two is slight. That's why I said the Texans may have the best unit left offensively or defensively, and Denver may be second or first as well. Arguable, and that's what makes this great, because I'm not a journalist. I'm an entertainer, right? There you go. Back to the start. I'll tell you what I need to see, Sags. One is more of the commitment to run. 30-plus carries always bodes well. Matter of fact, I'd love, and maybe I'll do this, over the last 3 years, teams that run the ball 30 times or more in a game, I want to know what the win-loss record is. I'm telling you, it's overwhelming. That being said, I need to see more of this. Stroud's got to play like he did as a rookie. He just does. He's got to play, which is a little bit shocking. I don't want to hear that he's gun-shy anymore for all his hits. Fuck that. Those excuses that I hear fly around, oh, man, he's still reeling from the second and third year as a starting quarterback. Well, then guess what? Get the fuck over it, and let's get rolling. It's time, because the guy's a really good player. 2 years ago, he was as good an intermediate thrower of the football we had in the league. Wouldn't miss anything that was in a clean pocket. I do understand the collateral damage. They did look to me in the run game like they were more physical, but you're right. Nick Cayley had it when I say easy, it's never easy, has the benefit of knowing that even if I give him the short field, those Pittsburgh Steelers ain't scoring shit on us. My defense too good. So it opens up your bandwidth, even when I say bandwidth, your bandwidth of peace of mind, not of I can throw it more. What that does is you go, let me start thinking defensively. Let me run it, shorten the game. We got a couple touchdowns for our defense. We scored 23 points in the last. Let's go kick their ass or whatever, 20-plus points in the fourth quarter and go take care of it because our defense. But that's going to get you in trouble when you face Stafford in the Super Bowl. It'll get you in trouble when you face Josh Allen or Sean Payton's all his stuff in the playoffs. That's going to get your ass when you face Drake May, because I got news for you. They can score. And they are going to make it more tougher on your defense. And they match you with physicality in some of these cases. Denver does. So I want to see them. But you know what I want to see, Sags? I want to see the offense finally get up, walk into a game and say, no. It's like when you're taking care of your parents are taking care of you your whole life. And then they get to be 95 years old and the script flips. Time for you to take care of mom and dad. This is grandpa, grandma for the grandkids, but it's parents flip the script with the kid now, and the kid flips it with the parents. You have carried us 100% the entire year. It's time for us to go into a game and hang. Oh, they hung 30. I'm talking about where you win a game because the offense was outlandishly good and the defense had their struggles. When have you said that in the last 10 weeks about the Texans offense? You haven't. No. So while I believe they can, and I think that Stroud's a good player, Nico Collins is explosive. These young guys can make some things happen, but they're just not stringing offensive series together. And I got to believe they're playing at times not to lose because they're afraid to death of what an offense can put. They don't want to give another offense the short field because their defense is too good. And even then, the defense is getting off the field. So for me, I'm just telling you now, Texans have a legit, not just a legitimate, an outright, no questions asked, Super Bowl caliber defense. Better than both Philadelphia and Kansas City that were in the Super Bowl and Philadelphia won it. I'll take this defense over either one last year's Super Bowl. And that's saying something because Philadelphia's got a damn good defense. They did last year. But if you go in there and you turn it over three times, I got news for you. Every team that's left, what do we got left? Eight teams? We down to eight now? Yeah. Yep, for the divisional. There's eight teams in this league. If you do that, turn it over more than they do, they're scoring more than 6 points on you in the game. I'm just telling you, because the quarterback play is only getting better. No disrespect to Aaron Rodgers. He's been great. Drake May's a better player right now. Bo Dix is a better player right now. Stafford's a better player right now. Darnold's a better player right now. And unfortunately for Aaron, who's had a phenomenal career, and I love the guy. I hope he comes back. I don't know if he will. Hope he does. I firmly believe that, see, some of these guys can carry a team. Right now, Stroud needs good players around him. He can't carry the team like he did as a rookie at times. And Rodgers, the same way, needs players around him. And they don't have that many. Drake May is elevating those players around. We see what Stafford does. We've watched Sam Darnold. So you're going to run into when their offense scores and your defense has a few bad series. It'll happen at some point. Can your offense bail them out? And if the offense can't bail them out, the Texans will lose next week if they're not careful.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Mike Tomlin spoke to the media after another playoff loss. Here's what he had to say.
Again, when you don't get it done, words are cheap. It's about what you do or you don't do. And so I appreciate the question, but people talk too much in our business. You either do or you don't.
He's right. And they haven't done anything. I don't think they haven't won a playoff game since 2017. Their last five losses have been by double digits in the playoffs I'm talking about. So things aren't going well in Pittsburgh. And Tomlin's been there a very, very long time. And there's talk, just like John Harbaugh was on the hot seat. He lost to these Steelers in week 17 to miss the playoffs. Tomlin comes in. Offense looks awful. Defense looked okay at times, and then it just kind of got away from them there.
Well, they held the Texans the less. Yeah. We were in the third quarter and they had 10 points or whatever it was.
They had played well. They struggled stopping Christian Kirk.
But they were held by an average offense.
Overall, they were held back. So what's your take here on Mike Tomlin moving forward? Should he stay in Pittsburgh? Should he be on the coaching list like John Harbaugh and others?
Well, listen, we're at a time when we're getting rid of people quickly. You didn't get rid of Mike Tomlin quickly. I don't believe that there's a longest tenured with one team head coach in the league right now. Andy Reid's been on two teams. John Harbaugh with his 18 years. There's no way that anybody has been at the same place longer than Mike Tomlin. I think Mike Tomlin's a hell of a coach and a hell of a man. I struggle with this because I know that the speech and for the organization and for the coach, it's easy to get caught up in doing the same thing over and over that's had success. And once again, they have a winning record, sakes, which he's never had a losing record. You keep going and getting in, but you're just falling short. Mike Tomlin's a Hall of Fame coach. Got a Super Bowl ring, and he's a Hall of Fame coach. I almost, not just him, that there's got to come. Listen, you can say what you want. John Harbaugh was fired from the Baltimore Ravens as good as he was. He was fired. This wasn't mutual. Oh, yeah, okay, good, I'll move on. He was fired. Now, if Mike Tomlin, when we say, is it really ever when a guy gets fired mutual? How many times does a guy go in and knock on the door and say, listen, I've been here this long, but I want you to fire me, and I'm just going to tell you, let's go. Mike Tomlin, wherever he goes, if he leaves, they'll win. Mike Tomlin's a good football coach. But my thought process is, even if it gets a little stale, Mike's going to have to evolve. Their personnel's going to have to evolve. Mike's got to evolve and change some of the things because – personnel doesn't match what they want to do. It just doesn't, whether it's assistant coaches or whether it's his offense. But are you really going to get better right off the bat? Honestly, John Harbaugh's out. Who are you hiring that's going to give you a better chance to win right now than Mike Tomlin? Are you going to go get Bill Belichick from North Carolina?
All right.
So while I understand things get stale, not just from team to player, but things get stale from Mike Tomlin and the team, again, Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin feel like they've been there a total of like 70 years. Three coaches. So they are fiercely loyal. And the coaches that coach for them are fiercely loyal. I don't know if Mike's going to be gone, but I can tell you this. He will be hired if he wants to immediately, unless he does broadcasting. And he's 100% right. We talk way too much, all of us, and too much shit in this business. Too much on a team. Too much celebration and stuff over a first down. Too much when you lose or when you win. Too much. We all do. Mike's spot on. It's a results-oriented business. But it's even not that anymore. If you're going just on results and the way a team wins, John Harbaugh is still a coach in Baltimore after one down year. And Mike Tomlin, how many guys in the world of football 30 years ago, you go and say, hey, man, he's won. He's had a winning – he got a Super Bowl ring and had a winning season. Every year he's been a head coach. I'd like you to tell me who fires that 30 years ago.
Right.
Social media and all this. You're not going to find better for the Steelers right now. Now, in 3 years, they may win a Super Bowl because a new coach had his stamp on it. But you better be awfully damn sure if you decide to escort Mike Tomlin out of that building. And Mike, see, here's the deal. Mike will have better options and more good options somewhere along the line than the Steelers will in this hiring phase. I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
If Harbaugh's gone, who are you hiring, Segs? You're hoping with a Joe Brady, maybe. You're hoping with an assistant mentor, whoever it is. You're hoping with, hell, maybe you go pluck Ryan Day from Ohio State and offer it. I don't know, but you're hoping. I don't need to hope with him. I just need to adjust a little bit when it's Mike Tomlin and the Steelers. So he's right, though. All the chatter and talking, when it comes right down to it, the Steelers sucked offensively, and the Texans kicked their ass up and down the field defensively, and that's why they're moving on. And that's why Tomlin, the frustrated, and the talk's going to go. I would imagine it'll be very respectful with the Rooney family and Mike Tomlin. And I hope Mike stays, but I can tell you this, if he doesn't, and I'm coaching and I'm general manager of a team, if I'm Atlanta, he'll have a call in 6 seconds, dude. By the time he says we're done, that call will be on his cell phone, hitting him on his hip. Do we still say that? Hit him on his hip. We don't do that. It was a pager, right?
Hit him
on his hip. Or slide into his DMs.
Yeah, that's
and
that's,
say, Mike, we got a better offense here in Atlanta than you got in Pittsburgh. Want to come join us? So, yeah, I love Tomlin. Well, it would be weird to see Mike in it, but we see it all the time now. Times have changed, but we do talk too much, and Mike is 100% correct. And he's not perfect. He's got a lot to learn still, and he knows that. But he is, if you want it told to you straight, he doesn't really give a rat's ass what you think. And I love that about him.
Well, there's two coaches that are being talked about, possibly being fired after losing in this first round, and that's Mike Tomlin that we just discussed and Matt LaFleur. Well, Aaron Rodgers has history, obviously, with both teams, and this is what he had to say about this situation with Mike Tomlin and Matt LaFleur.
I mean, this league has changed a lot in my 21 years. When you hear a conversation about the Mike Tomlins of the world, Matt LaFleurs of the world. Those are just two that kind of I've played for. And when I first got in the league, there wouldn't be conversation about whether those guys were on the hot seat, but the way that the league is covered now and the way that there's snap decisions and the validity given to the, the Twitter experts and all the, experts on TV now who make it seem like they know what the hell they're talking about. To me, that's an absolute joke. And for either of those two guys to be on the hot seat is really apropos of where we're at as a society and a league, because obviously Matt's done a lot of great things in Green Bay and we had a lot of success. Mike T has had more success than damn near anybody in the league, for the last 19, 20 years. And more than that, though, when you have the right guy and the culture is right, you don't think about making a change. But there's a lot of pressure that comes from the outside, and obviously that sways decisions from time to time, but it's not how I would do things and not how the league used to be.
He's 100% correct. Let me tell you something, man. Would you, just in success terms, if a quarterback had the success that Tomlin and LaFleur have had, one Super Bowl for one, no Super Bowl for the other guy's head coach, but had the results they've had of being in the playoffs every year, winning divisions, would you cut your quarterback? Would we say he's a joke, or we'd get him? We let guys hang around. I know we get rid of the young guys too soon. We don't let them develop like the Darnolds and stuff, and eventually they come around. But dude, they want to fire Nick Sirianni, some do in Philadelphia. The guy's been to two Super Bowls in, 6 years? That wouldn't have happened years ago. Whether you like him or not, I'm just talking about results. Forget the personality and what they're doing and the most recent loss.
Yeah.
And I can make the argument for Mike Tomlin. I've never played for Mike. Broadcast a lot of stuff and been on TV a lot talking about him and what he's done with the Steelers. With Mike Tomlin, can you make the argument for teams that have made the playoffs or had winning records since Ben Roethlisberger left? And even at times at the end of Ben, when Ben was struggling to move like he did, has anybody had more winning success with less on offense than him? There's been plenty that have had less good offenses. Cleveland right. at the quarterback situation, all that. I'm talking about that have won and haven't had a dominant offense. When's the last time you said, man, Pittsburgh's dominant offensively? Truthfully, overall, that they scared you when Ben was at his best?
Yeah.
Throwing for 350 a week, it felt like. So, and he gets Rodgers. Rodgers is a hell of a player. We know he's first ballot Hall of Famer, all that, but Aaron's in his 40s. He's just different with his movement. He doesn't step away from the things, step out like he used to. Aaron's 100% correct. The league's changed, and it's going to continue to change. The satisfaction, the Twitter, all these guys who think they know more than Mike Tomlin on TV and radio, that they don't, although they're allowed an opinion because they're entertainers. But he's exactly right. So for me, I'm just trying to sit there and say, okay, I always say this. If you're going to get rid of somebody, you better damn well make sure the next guy's better. Because it's hard to replace Matt LaFleur. Now listen, LaFleur has got to find a way in games like that. You can't lose those. And that falls directly on the – I'm not alleviating him from any pressure on Matt LaFleur. There is pressure. And Mike Tomlin. But did anybody expect Pittsburgh as the season was rolling along that Mike Tomlin was going to have Pittsburgh in this position, in truth, with that offense? No. And the defensive injuries and the lack of physicality and Watt getting hurt. I mean, a hole in his lung. Are we serious here? So I can make that argument on the good side. But Aaron's right. The league's changed. It's ridiculous. And this hot seat thing, you're going to have a hard time. Now, I understand if Harbaugh was in and you think you like him more than LaFleur, okay. That's 6-1, half dozen the other good coaches. Harbaugh's won a Super Bowl. But even him, after all this, had one bad year, and they fired him. One.
And that bad year.
Because somebody in the building didn't like – what's that? Yeah.
Yeah, bad year was 8-9 when Lamar was hurt a lot.
Right, want the coordinator. We had, seven guys on defense hurt for a certain part of the season? So, this is selective choosing. If you're just looking and have any idea about football, LaFleur and Tomlin should not be on the hot seat. Now, if you say, well, Bill Belichick's available in the NFL and I want the Belichick in New England, okay, we're going to try that. Andy Reid comes available. I get it. But over the last 20 years, nobody's done it better consistently than the guy that you're looking at right there on the left, and the guy on the right has made a major impact. So I guess Kyle Shanahan needs fired, right? I mean, they're in the playoffs, but man, they've been to Super Bowl and lost. Got beat by Philadelphia a couple of years ago when they were down to their 17th quarterback. So we should fire him. No, the truth is John Harbaugh should still be at Baltimore. These two cats shouldn't be talking about it. They should be, how are we going to get personnel and get better? But there should be pressure on both because getting there is not enough. But if we're going by this hot seat shit, then only one team should be happy when the year's over. And every other coach should be on the hot seat, right? If McVay loses it, shouldn't we say, all these numbers, damn, what happened to Sean McVay? How did he blow this? Of course not. But that's what you're going to hear. Well, Jim Harbaugh, man, that offense was putrid against New England. Guess what? Maybe we should fire him. Go back to college, right? Is that where we are? So you're telling me that every 31 coaches need to be on the hot seat, including Nick Sirianni, who's the Super Bowl champion from last year. So it's absurd. Change is inevitable. But if you're talking about hot seat and are you going to find better immediately than the two guys you're talking about and Aaron's talking about, Sirianni and LaFleur, unless his name's John Harbaugh or unless one of those guys like, now if you want to go the Dan Lannings, like I said, or the Ryan Days, you're still, that's a wing and a prayer from college to the NFL. It ain't easy. So to me, if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin's my coach if he wants to stay next year. And if I'm the Green Bay Packers, you know, we're putting people on notice, and Matt LaFleur included. LaFleur feels the pressure, but damn, he's still one hell of a football coach, and he wouldn't be unemployed long either because I'd hire him too. So there you go.
Well, you just mentioned Jim Harbaugh and that offense. I just looked at Twitter, and the Chargers have fired offensive coordinator Greg Roman, who's been with both Harbaugh brothers over the years. He was with Baltimore.
The initial excellence of Lamar Jackson was under Greg Roman.
Yes, so he is out. So the Chargers will now be looking for an OC to coach under Jim Harbaugh.
Now, here's interesting. If you're Cliff Kingsbury, if you're Jim Harbaugh, do you go get a Cliff Kingsbury who's completely different than the philosophy you usually go by? Line up, get under center. Do you do it like a guy like Nick Saban's done in the past in college? Like, man, we play defense, we run the ball, like I was saying. I don't like to get into all this. And then you go hire Lane Kiffin or Steve Sarkisian to change the way you've always viewed it. If you're Jim Harbaugh, what do we look at Jim Harbaugh? Physical, playing the gun sometimes, get under center, got to maximize Justin Herbert. We saw some of the things that Cliff's done with, obviously, as a coach at Texas Tech with Mahomes. We saw what he did with Jake Daniels. Is this one of those? Because also pressure falls on Herbert. We're saying, here's a guy who's a disappointment, plays well, big physical specimen, can't close out in the playoffs. So if you're Harbaugh, do you dig into your, I got to step outside my run the ball, pound it physically, try to keep that with you as the head coach, but find a way to expand your offense with a Cliff Kingsbury or a Mike McDaniel guy. Now, one thing that Harbaugh would love is having the run game stuff that Mike McDaniel is so
good at. I was going to bring up Mike McDaniel, and I think that fits, like both styles fit well together. Harbaugh and McDaniel. McDaniel does things a little differently running the ball than I think.
Maybe Jim steals Monken too. Jim takes Monken from getting fired. He takes Monken from there and says, my brother swears by him. I'm hiring his ass. And that wouldn't shock me if he's hired by the end of the day or tomorrow. Would not shock me one bit.
That would make a lot of sense as well. And we know Todd will run the ball and fits that style with, you know, just had Derrick Henry the last couple of years and likes to pound the rock. And they're going to get Rashawn Slater and they're going to get Joe Alt back next year, which is two very good young bookend offensive tackles that takes that offensive line from the worst offensive line in football that it was all year this year to a better unit. And then you can go into the offseason and fix your other areas as well. So that'll be something to watch. All right, moving on. We still haven't really got to talk about it much. Indiana just destroyed Oregon, 55-22. I mentioned yesterday at the end of the show, real quick, Fernando Mendoza, 17-20. I think it was 177 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, had more touchdowns, 2 more touchdowns than he did incompletions in the game. Indiana ran the ball well. But as you talked about, the story of this game, especially early, was this Indiana defense. And remember, they lost arguably their best defensive player, Daly, when he got hurt celebrating after one of their last games of the season. He didn't play in the game, and this defense was still just outstanding against Dante Moore and company. And Oregon never had a chance from the kickoff.
Shouldn't we fire Dan Lanning then, according to the way it is? Because he keeps getting into the playoff and can't win, can't get to the final and win the final, right? Gets to it, can't win, right? So, which I'm obviously being sarcastic and hyperbolic, but that's the thought. Oh, Dan can't win. Let's go find somebody else. No, slow down. But their ability to underachieve in these big moments has been a problem for Lanning's Oregon Ducks in the postseason. This looks eerily similar to another Big Ten team last year that when they got to the playoff, they dismantled their opponent. And that's exactly what Indiana's doing, just like Ohio State did. And the 4 quarterbacks in the last 2 finals are all transfers. So you guys in the recruiting world out there, here's what coaches are looking for. You train them. We'll bring them in. We want experience because Will Howard and Riley Leonard and Mendoza and Carson Beck were all somewhere else. Somebody went and got them. With Indiana, fine. What's the weakness, Sakes? There isn't one. Great coaching. I'll tell you the weakness. They have, I think, 4 or 5-star guys that were 5 stars when they were recruited. The average age for Indiana's player is almost 24, like 23.7. So, like a little bit of like BYU, guys have hung in and played a little bit longer, right? Whether it's a transfer, a church mission at BYU. But what they've done is buy-ins everything, Sakes. I say that all the time. Indiana's buying because let me ask you this. How many people that cover college football? I'm not talking about Herb Street, who's going to call the game. I'm talking about that cover college football and that are insiders, that are great at it, could name the entire Indiana roster if they weren't broadcasting the game. Going into the season, and you couldn't, but you can name the stars everywhere else. What they've done is, and the thing about it is we call stars, it just goes to show you 5 stars doesn't mean shit. When it comes to are you developing, are you getting buy-in, and can you play when it's nut cut time? And Indiana's doing as well as anybody. And you start to think about the adversity they faced in the Penn State game and moving forward. Between their last 3 and 4 games and these playoff games, they're playing games that aren't even close. They made Oregon look like a Division III school that didn't know how to play. And I went into that game, Segs, and what did I say? I said, the most important unit may very well be Indiana's defense, and they are the most underrated unit in the playoffs. Because Mendoza, Heisman Trophy, first pick of the draft. We start talking about all that, but it was their defense that made it miserable on this explosive Oregon offense. And they're playing so good. I know we're going to preview it when it comes around, but Miami, neither team, look at the numbers. They don't want to throw it as much as they want to throw it, mix it in. They'd like to throw it around 25 times, run it, play great defense, and get their ass out.
Yeah.
But the contrast between the two teams, flash and physicality and the way we perceive them in Miami, and then Indiana, well, the quarterback and the coach, and 2 years in a row they've been in the playoff. This is a basketball school. No. They're just as physical. They've got great perimeter people that just weren't as highly publicized. We're in for a hell of a run. The Indiana Hoosiers, I still believe there's people that don't buy in. I do. You can't do what they've done and beat up on these playoff teams and not be good. Everything they're doing is working to perfection. And the most underrated part of this game in the entire college football season has been Indiana Hoosiers defense. And it will be the difference in this game. And I actually think this is going to be the reason they win, even though I think it's going to be closer than people think.
The most incredible thing about this game is you mentioned it. Indiana's average age is like 23.7, like you said. So that's almost 6 years older than Malachi Toney.
Look at the numbers right there, please. Go back to that. Bring that back. Look at that. Now, does that all of a sudden mean that 4 stars, 5 stars can't play? Or does that mean right there that the guys on the right, and I know Oregon's got great players and great coaches, but the guys on the right going in, if you knew nothing about them and you put that up, you know, most people say, oh, this is an ass kicking for Oregon.
Yeah.
But that thing on the right, you can't, what you can't measure, how heart and smarts and game planning and belief and confidence. Indiana's got that as much as anybody in the country right now. And they're not supposed to because they're the Indiana Hoosiers.
Right.
This isn't a basketball program right now. It's a football program.
Well, and what that graphic there doesn't take into account is, like we just said, their average age is almost 24 years old. I mean, these are grown men.
Experience.
That are playing, yes, that are playing against, you know, a lot of these teams are younger. And when your average age is 21 playing against almost 24, I mean, people just say, oh, it's only 2 years. That 2 years, when a lot of your players are in their fourth, fifth, and sixth years of college football, I mean, the experience they have in this game and then putting it all together with a bunch of other basically like-minded individuals that have played that long in college football, it is an advantage, and it's something that Kurt Cignetti has figured out. He's figured out it works at his past schools. He's brought it to Indiana, and in 2 years, now they sit in the national championship. And until some, because I've seen a lot of people complaining about the age and the fact that so many of these guys are fifth and sixth year, and we got some guys going for their seventh, and it's just insane right now. But
yeah,
just like NIL, just like paying players now, it's legal. So until it's not, do what you got to do to win a national championship.
Yeah, but the same people bitching about, well, they got 23.7, you know, they're almost 24 years old for the average player, are the same people that want us to give a guy a sixth and seventh year to play fucking college football.
Right, exactly.
So you can't have, if it's on their team, that can help their team. Bottom line is we may hate the rules and the way the landscape is, but it's the landscape. So you either adapt and adjust and deal with it. What's pretty, Indiana going out and getting experienced players and they're winning. There's no rule against it until you say, can only play 5 years, or you can't do this, you can only transfer once. It's going to continue. There's other teams in the country that are old like Indiana. When I say older and more experienced, I'm going to tell you this too. With this, I'm trying to figure out, and I get it, but I don't from the quarterback standpoint. Mike and Dustin and you guys, and you got great insight. What do you need from Fernando Mendoza just this year? I don't know if he's going to be a top-ranked pro. What do you need to see that tells you still don't buy into Mendoza? It won't matter if it's Tom Brady or Joe Montana. If the defense is playing in the backfield and kicks his ass, he'll become very average like the rest of us do. So it's not, well, what's going to happen if Miami beats him down in that defensive line? He's played some pretty good defensive fronts this year. Oregon's pretty good. Ohio State's pretty good, and dismantled them. So I'm only going by what I see now. I don't know about 10 years from now. He's kind of dorky, and I mean that affectionately, with his, you know, he's got everything buttoned up, and I mean, Mendoza, boom, boom, boom. He's a little bit goofy, and, you know, you like, man, it's howdy doody time, but I mean that affectionate. I like, he got some howdy doody in him. Ain't nothing wrong. Brady had some howdy doody in him. Heck, I've been told I'm a dork. I'm not as good a player as they are, but it's okay. But, and he doesn't look the part of a macho tough guy, but he plays like one.
He's Kirk Cousins.
What's that to like? He's accurate. He protects the ball. He's tough. When he faced adversity, he took him down the field in the biggest game at Penn State that they had to come back from that was a threat to them winning and won. He's played as that. Well, it's just the defense. Well, you know, we can say that about everybody. Last year, then Jalen Hurts didn't matter. He threw a couple touchdowns in the Super Bowl, but their defense won in the Super Bowl. No, if those two touchdowns aren't touchdowns and he throws two picks, then Philadelphia may not win. So the point is that I don't know how you think Mendoza's – there's not a heavy advantage, even though the way Beck has played at the quarterback. Put it this way. If Mendoza was on Miami, Miami would be a 10-point favorite. I'm just telling you, they would in this game. Even though they only throw 20 times, the guy protects the ball and then makes spectacular, accurate throws when they're there. I don't know what's going to happen in this game. If they're playing in the backfield, he'll become very average. You saw the first two sacks of the game in the first three plays. What'd he do, though? I think quarterbacks wilt and piss down their leg. He came back and dealt. And what was the final score again? They hung 50-plus on him. Is that what you're saying, Seth?
Yeah, 55-22. So,
I don't know what you're trying to – well, I don't know what you – now, if you're the owner of an NFL team and you don't believe he should be the first pick, that's fine. But what he's doing at Indiana and the way he's – the offense is just staying out of bad plays and he's making clutch plays, who knows what's going to happen in this one. But if going into this, Mendoza's your biggest worry, then you ain't watched the same football I've watched this year. He should not be your biggest worry. And I can tell you this, the Indiana defense is better than the Miami offense. And the Miami defense is, you could say they're going to give the Indiana offense all they can handle. It feels like a low-scoring game, Sykes. It does. But we'll see if you can keep your quarterbacks upright, which is always the biggest key going into a game in the passing game.
Yeah, for sure. All right, one last topic before we get to our bet of the day, which is going to be a little bit different today. But one more topic, and this is something I saw, and I'm just like, really, really. And I think there's reasons behind this. The Los Angeles Lakers, LeBron James, is wearing a patch. He wore it last night for the first time that says 23 on it for his 23 seasons in the NBA, more than anybody ever. I understand he's been in the league longer than everybody. My first question is, why now? Why now? Why January 12th is he putting that patch on? I mean, why not from the start of the season? And my answer to that, which I believe, is because when LeBron has played, he's been fucking awful. I mean, just bad. If you watch him try and play defense, he's not even trying to play defense anymore. He's jacking up shots. The Los Angeles Lakers are an actual good basketball team when he sits out. When he sits out and avoids Giannis again, like he did the other night, when he sits out the back-to-backs, you know, where, because as he says, man, Father Time's, you know, catching up to me or whatever it is. I'm in year 23, yet he's doing commercials saying that he's beaten Father Time in the past and all this stuff. I think they need some good pub around LeBron James. So let's throw this at him. Let's come up with something that is this jersey patch for 23 years in the NBA. And we gotta pump up LeBron to make him feel good. I think that's what it is. That's why it's now, because of the way this season has gone for the Lakers when he's on the floor and when he's not, because that's a headline as it is as well.
So let me ask you this. And I saw the story. The first thing I did was throw up in my mouth.
Yeah.
As a Laker fan, my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect LeBron's game immensely, but there's no more self-serving look at me guy in the league. And it doesn't even have to be about everything he does. And does he deserve a hall pass for a bad season 23 years in? Sure. We know how good the guy is, but I'm talking about right now compartmentalizing this. Are all his teammates wearing it, Segs? No. Just him. Is the rest of the league wearing LeBron, the ode to LeBron patch? That's why he's not retiring until he gets his full season going away presence, right? This is embarrassing and humiliating. And if you're LeBron, you know what you should have done? Thanks for the patch. Thanks for the thought. If they want to hang a banner, it's whatever the crypto is, arena, is that what we're calling it now? It's crypto, not Staples. Yeah, it's crypto. Before, yeah, you want to hang a banner 23 years, fine. Did they put a goat on Jordan's jersey, his last, at the end of his career? Mm-mm. Did they put an all-time leading scorer patch on Abdul-Jabbar's when he left the league?
No.
Okay. I don't know. Did John Stockton get an all-time assist leader thing on his?
No.
No. Okay. I'm just curious about this. I don't know. This just goes to tell you, let's make sure LeBron's happy. I don't know. If you're LeBron James and you wanted to do it right and prove that you're one of the fellas, you should have said no.
Right.
You should have said, thank you for the thought. I'm honored by it. You would have got pub for that anyway. Take it off. Nobody's forcing this on him. Nobody's doing it. It's him. Patch 23 years. Did Brady get a patch on his jersey?
I was just going to say, Tom Brady, did he get something that said, oh,
did Rodgers have a patch on his jersey last night?
No.
Roger, I didn't see a patch on Rodgers' jersey saying, you know, 21 years in the I didn't. Matter of fact, 21 years as a quarterback in the NFL, maybe more than 23 years of some load management, even though it's a freak show. He's the biggest freak in the NBA history with his body and his performance. There's no doubting it. But he's also, there's never been a bigger look at me guy in the league than LeBron, period. It's not even close. I mean, I thought the announcement or this whatever that was on ESPN that we carved away 5 years, so he said he was going somewhere. Carved out 5 hours.
2010.
This is now the next thing. He gets a patch for longevity. Okay. Embarrassment. Should have said no. Should have said, this isn't about me. This is about the team. Everybody knows I've been around. Trust me. Everybody knows what LeBron's done his whole career. Because if you want to know how good it's been or how long it's been, just fucking ask him. Now, with much respect I have for his game, this to me, I don't respect. I respect that he's got 23 years in, but what happens if somebody gets 24 in but isn't a superstar? Are we going to give them that? Do they get a patch saying, I would want it to say, I played longer than LeBron, and that's the patch. So to me, this is just another way. The NBA, quite frankly, with scheduling and all the things they do and in-season tournaments, they just don't get it. And LeBron should know better 23 years in. What are we going to start putting if you win the MVP? Maybe we should just put MVP on Jokic's right. and Shea Gilgeous's jersey just because they won one, and Nicole has won multiple.
Yep.
I don't know. This to me is as self-serving as it gets, and I don't know if LeBron brought it up, but who would all of a sudden wake up in a room and say, you know what, I think we're going to do this. Let's put a patch on LeBron thanking him for 23 years, but nobody else will wear it. It's just him. As if he was a Navy fucking SEAL and he deserves it on. With a four-star general. And basketball player played 23 years. He ain't the only one.
Let's do it right in the middle of the season.
Yeah, at the start where we announce it during training camp. Let's just slap it on him in mid-January during the football playoffs. Sakes, how many years do you have? Can you hit the Google if you have? How many years did Abdul-Jabbar play?
One second.
From Lou Alcindor to Abdul-Jabbar. I'm just curious.
He was... I'd have to count 1, 2.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
20 years.
So everybody that goes over 20 years should get a patch. Hang a banner and thank LeBron. Take the patch off and get back to business because we're in January. There's a long season. I understand we want to respect. Trust me, they're going to throw enough parties and celebrations for LeBron when he retires, thanking him for a phenomenal career. But this just adds to what we always think about him. It's more about him than it's been about anything else, and it's obvious. So I love the guy's game, but this to me, this reeks. It's an embarrassment, if you ask me, and I hate it.
The Los Angeles Lakers are 23-14, so he's only played in 20 of their 37 games so far this season. Numbers way down, and like I said, they are a much worse basketball team when he's on the floor. His plus-minus is awful. It's like one of the worst in the league. At least it was at one point. I don't know where it stands as of today, but he's not even trying when he's on the floor. Now, last night in the game where he's wearing the patch, they show the Lakers bench and you're looking around, JJ Redick's, you know, drawing up a play. Everybody's in there looking. And all of a sudden it's like, where's LeBron? Oh, he's just sitting at the end of the bench all by himself, not looking.
Dude, he's got a 23-year patch on. He can do what he wants.
Yeah. I mean,
this ain't a Purple Heart medal you get. That's serious stuff. You played and it's a phenomenal accomplishment. But But let us stand up there and throw a 4-hour going away party when he happens. We'll do TV. We'll put patches on him. He can go hang his own banner in the arena, wherever he played, all over in Miami and Cleveland and Los Angeles, do all of that. But can we stop the patch in the middle of the season? Because there's guys who have put 20-plus years in their career, have had the same career LeBron's had. And this isn't – we put the initials of owners that die that own a team during a season, and everybody wears it. We got a patch for one, as if the rest of his teammates along the way didn't exist in helping him get to 23 years. And if the load management rule had 3 extra years for him, even though he's played a lot of basketball, this is a self-righteous, self-righteous isn't even the right phrase. This is such a selfish look at me thing. And he should be honored, and we should, but not during a season with a patch that nobody else is wearing but him. Are you kidding?
The only patch I can think of in sports that one individual wears is the NFL Man of the Year, you know, and that's for his dedication off the field, what he does off the field to charities and all that stuff. I'm pretty sure they wear a patch or a sticker on their helmet or something.
Well, that's an earned through a season. They exactly. Don't put it in there. Yes. They're not putting your six-time winner on the back. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So if you win it and then you don't win it the next year, you do not have the patch. I'm
that's
fair.
Sure. Okay. If you tell no problem. And here's another thing. Yeah, we're gonna line up, ladies and gentlemen. We'd like to honor Gold Star, Purple Heart, Humanity, but and LeBron paid 23 years. Let's put that patch on. Oh, yeah. Come on now. Okay. It's a patch that we want to on. Listen, put it on a Letterman's jacket when your career is over with the Lakers and stick it on there like we all did when we left our high school. Okay. I got the physical fitness patch. Bam, because I did 25 push-ups in 8 seconds. Great. This is a bigger accomplishment than that, but there's other people that have played 20 years and 21 years and done all those things. And this is the first time I've seen a LeBron's alive. He didn't die, so we're not putting a patch on everybody's uniform. We put a look like, from my vantage point, I know it's not, but it looked like a Rocky Balboa patch of like whatever from a disc celebrate at the top of the steps because LeBron's 23. I don't even know what it is from a disc. That
it's the silhouette of the chalk throw.
Oh, there that's you go. It so it almost looks like
that's
it's right.
That's what it is.
This, right.
It's the silhouette of the chalk
throw. Well, it kind of looks like a Balboa. Look at that from a disc. It's sexy. It almost looks
it
like
does. Oh,
Balboa
yeah, like
on the can. Steps in Philadelphia, right? Does. So, but I'm just calling him. His new name is Patch. Patch James. The Patch.
I love his
sounds
silhouette.
Sounds like a new series. The Patch.
I love his silhouette is something he's done. He does before games that, you know, kind of came from
the
Michael
where he got
Jordan.
That from. Yeah.
Yeah, the Michael Jordan clapping in Norm Van Leer and Johnny Red Kerr's face before every home game there.
Norman. That's arena. Right.
So, I mean.
Yeah, but hey, man. Sags, I've been doing this for almost 40 years. Where's my patch?
Yeah, we'll have one we're gonna wait till the middle of the year when it actually, you know, doesn't make any sense to do it. We'll just throw one at you randomly.
Ovechkin, Dustin Bull pointed out, Ovechkin passes Gretzky, which I don't think any of us thought was ever gonna happen because great one, 9-time MVP. Ovi's losing teeth, but he ain't got a patch. Okay. Yeah. He had a patch on his jersey that says all-time leading goal scorer. How many years that dude played? Well, are we pushing 20 like for Ovechkin? Yeah, and he's still scoring goals and still has to pull his teeth out to play. I mean, how many has that guy scored? Okay, love LeBron, but just stop. We didn't need a patch on his jersey once a season. When did we wake up and, hey, you know what? Put a patch on LeBron's jersey. He's unhappy right now. Let's make sure he's happy. Stop it. Just stop it. Okay? I mean, there comes a point in time when enough's enough, and quite frankly, he's not a top 10 player anymore in the league. That's okay. He's earned his right to walk when he's ready to walk, but a patch doesn't help the reputation that people have of him as being a look-at-me guy. And we've all looked plenty because you're a great player and, by all accounts, a good human being with money and charity and all that. I don't know. I don't know him. But this is awful optics, and anybody kisses ass over this is just it doesn't understand the team concept. Tiger Woods. I mean, I don't see a goat patch on Woods or Nicklaus.
Yeah.
So 23 years. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate your service, LeBron.
We were going to do the bet of the day, but Adam Schefter just reported that Mike Tomlin is stepping down from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You mean he got fired?
Well, that's we'll see.
Well, after all that talk, now we're ending the show with I'm anxious to see when he went in there. It's like, well, we want to do this, this. We want to get rid of this coach, this coach, this coach. We want to do this. Mike just says, you know what? I'm moving on. But this goes to the other part of that, Sakes. Maybe Mike feels it stale, and he, and you know, Mike feels like the type of guy that I'm not making the impact I want. It's time for me to move on. And maybe that's the case here, Pittsburgh. It'll be weird for Pittsburgh, but don't feel sorry for Mike Tomlin, and Mike won't want you to feel sorry for him. He'll land somewhere good. If you're these other teams available and you're not getting a commitment from John Harbaugh, call Mike Tomlin before he gets out of Pittsburgh's building with all his goods. He's had a hell of a run. Good on him. And if he did walk away and it wasn't fired, then it tells you Mike's ready for something different, or he's tired, and I don't blame him.
It feels eerily similar to Kyle Whittingham in Utah. Just like, all right, like it's been, and that's actually what, both 19 years, right?
Around just under 20 seasons. Years. They're going to get a patch on their shirt.
So. Yes. No, they didn't get to 20. They don't get the patch. That's
how dare them. What a shitty career by both of those guys, right? Yeah.
Just mail it in. Just be done. And it still feels like Mike Tomlin's like 39 years old, and he's been there 19 seasons.
Yeah. Agreed.
So
agreed.
I don't even know how old he is. I would guess in his later 50s. Would be my guess for Mike Tomlin. Is he over 60? I'm not even sure.
I don't think so. Dude. I think he's in his 50s, right? Didn't he get the job in his 30s?
He's 53.
There you go. Yeah.
53. This Mike's guy could 20 more years somewhere else and not be as old as Pete Carroll is right now.
Well, I got news for you. If he decides he doesn't want to coach again, there's a Hall of Fame bust waiting for Mike Tomlin.
Oh, yeah.
And rightfully so. No doubt about it. Good on him. If Mike did walk away, good on Mike. If you're an organization, call and beg him not to retire, because he'll win for you. If you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you better find somebody better. Or maybe you better get into the Harbaugh mix as well. You better hup a Didi and get your ass moving to find the next guy. If that's the case.
Steelers will be looking for just their fourth head coach since 1969.
79, 89, 99, 2009, 2019. We're talking about 57 years. Is that about right? 19 to 26. Yeah. Is it 57 years?
Yeah.
That's saying something, man. You can never say that the Steelers are not loyal to their coaching staff.
I don't care.
And all three of them won Super Bowls. All three of them won Super Bowls.
Yeah. I don't care who you are. If you're a head coach, I'm calling the Pittsburgh Steelers to say, I want this job.
Yes, because you got 20 years of security if you just win. Yeah.
Like, you know, like, and they're not going to just fire somebody just because, really think hard about it because of now the history they've built. They don't want to be known as now all of a sudden a team that hires a guy and 3 years later he's out the door and they're paying him money to go away. They want to keep this trend of long-term coaches keep going, like, you know, the Packers with Favre, to Rodgers, to now Jordan Love. They want to keep that going at the Pittsburgh.
You know, it's interesting, two things is that while I agree with Aaron Rodgers, him being on the hot seat's just stupid, but it doesn't surprise me that he's not going to be the coach there this year with the way the landscape is in pro sports. It does not surprise me a bit. I hope Mike continues to coach. He made an impact, and that great organization the Steelers have, I hope they find a person that can get close to the success Mike Tomlin had in damn near two decades as a head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Good on Mike, man. Love it.
And now the longest tenured NFL head coach is Andy Reid, who got to Kansas City in 2013. So that is the longest tenured head coach. What? So now we're up to, is it 9 or 10 openings in the NFL? I think it's just 9. I think it was 8. And then
I believe this was the 9th.
LaFleur didn't go anywhere. And I believe Mike Tomlin is number 9, or the Pittsburgh Steelers opening is number 9 in the NFL. So over a quarter of the NFL teams are looking for head coaches at this moment.
And Rodgers, when he makes his decision, I don't know if he'll make it overnight, because Aaron likes to let us think about this stuff.
Well, yeah, now he's going to see time off to do it. On.
Yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers is done. That's just my opinion. I may be 90% wrong. Everybody may disagree. Maybe he wants to give it one more go, but now he's got to go through another system, another head coach, doing it again. Wondering if Pittsburgh's going to be any good next year offensively, because their offense doesn't scare anybody. They don't scare me. And Rodgers is a hell of a player. I wonder if both coach and player, coach will coach again. I just don't know if player's going to play again, meaning Aaron Rodgers. And what a career it's been. Both of them, if they decide not to do either, man, be inducted into the Hall of Fame the same year, 5 years from now, if they both are done. If Mike says, I've had it, I think Mike's too young, got too much to offer. Aaron's still got game, but he's got to have great players around him. Mike's too young. Mike needs to go run a team. Even if he takes a year off, he'll be just as valuable next year because people realize just the impact he made.
I mean, 53 years old as a head coach when you have 19 seasons of experience at it is like being 30 as a quarterback. You know,
no doubt.
You
feel like and still having the physical skills to play.
Yeah, yes. You still have another back half of career to go.
Some guys aren't getting their first job as a head coach in the NFL till this age.
Right.
There's not. So
he's got 19
it's been a hell of a run
for
Mike in Pittsburgh. Yeah, good on him. He's going to get a patch at his press conference, so just so you know. We're going to lower it for 19 years just because, well, that's what we do. So we move goalposts.
Yeah. I like that. I like that.
You know what Mike would say? You know what Mike would say? Get that patch out of my face.
Yeah,
well, give it to me at the end, and I'll stick it on my trophy case. That's exactly
LeBron would take it. He'll wear the patch for him.
And just Lakers jersey. To take the and white out the David stick his hit. I could have played wide receiver in the NFL for 19 years.
I coached the Steelers for 19 years. That's what he'll tell
us.
Real quick, our bet of the day. Normally we do a game or something, but today with NFL wildcard weekend ending, we're just going to put up the odds for the remaining 8 teams in the NFL to win the Super Bowl. What odds do you like best here when you look at this? I mean, you got the San Francisco 49ers at 19-1. You got the Bears at 16-1, 850 for the Texans.
The two good odds, the ones because of the way their defense plays, and I know defense travels, those two teams that are back-to-back at 700 and 850, the Texans and Broncos, they do have weaknesses, but their defense tell me they can't. But experience, even though they're beat up, I mean, taking a flyer at 19-1 on the 49ers isn't such a bad idea. Because maybe this is the year where they're not healthy and they find their way in and they are the ones who make the play in the fourth quarter. But you're not, you know, the teams at the top, obviously. Buffalo's decent, Segs, because they've got a home run hitting quarterback and they run the football and they could run through it. And that might be, those three teams in the middle of the AFC probably your best because I'm not looking at any of them saying they've got no shot. The 49ers with all their injuries tough. And I'm going to tell you what. I know the Bears defense, and I know you can't keep spotting people points, but the way they win games coming from behind, that may be worth throwing 100 on the Chicago Bears just to see what happens. You know what I'm saying? It's not a big risk. But I like the teams, the three AFC teams in the middle that I think are all three capable of getting there and winning it. But they also all have flaws, and we know what those are on those three teams in there. So give me somebody. It's hard to go all the way down because the injuries and the Kittle situation now in San Francisco. And obviously, you're not getting great odds at the top. So give me the three AFC teams in the middle. Hell, there's another fourth with New England, but you're not getting great odds. I'm leaning towards Buffalo as a one that I can still see them winning it because maybe it's Josh Allen's year. And I think at the beginning of the year, I had Buffalo beating the Rams in the Super Bowl, I think. And I still
I have it.
I don't know how Buffalo's going to do it if they don't get help. But Josh Allen's so spectacular, he may be able to pull this off.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I probably lean towards the Bills as well, is just with those odds and the way things throwing money at the either the Bears or 49ers, I think would be smart as well, just because
it's such a big amount of money, right?
Big odds. I don't think going into these games this weekend that I'm looking at the Rams and the Seahawks and being like, yeah, they're just going to beat the shit out of both of those teams. I don't think so. I mean, the 49ers know the Seahawks so well. They play tough. Yeah, you got to go to Seattle. And then the Rams, I mean, they're going. They haven't played well in the cold, and we could talk about it later in the week as we get closer, but their record in cold weather games is not good. And right now, the forecast on Sunday night, because the Bears and Rams play in Chicago Sunday night, it might be like 7 when the ball's kicked off. And then by halftime, they're talking about it being a top 10 coldest game in Soldier Field history, which I think I've been to 2 or 3 of the coldest. And it's, I mean, when you're there,
the wind's buzzing, dude, it's tough. That's a hard place, man, off the lake.
When you're, it's tough on me when I'm, you know, ordering a beer and it gets to me and it's half frozen and then you got to drink it fast. And that's tough. That might be tougher than playing quarterback. You think?
Probably, maybe a little tougher because it might freeze in your hand.
Right.
There ain't anything tougher than postseason quarterback, dog.
No, I mean,
sports.
Getting a half-frozen beer, trying to drink that in time, like that's
turn it into a Slurpee and slush it. Okay,
that's a real that's real life problems right there, Sean. Not playing quarterback in the NFL.
If you can do it and drink it before it freezes, I'll give you a patch. Okay.
I need that patch. It's been a long time of doing that with beer at Bears games in the cold.
Unbelievable.
I need a fucking patch. Yeah. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll wrap up the Mike Tomlin Pittsburgh situation because I'm sure we'll learn more as we continue on throughout the day. We'll see if anyone else gets any patches. We'll start to look ahead to the NFL weekend and what all is going to happen in these four games coming Sunday. Also, I have a question about the way the playoffs are set up that I want to ask you and get your take on as well. So I'll make
the
sure
NFL playoffs NFL playoffs.
Yes. And then we can kind of start getting ready. I know we got even all the way till next Monday, but just, you know, maybe we can start looking at groupings and say, you know, Indiana's defensive line versus Miami's offensive line. Yeah. And just kind of start looking ahead to the national championship, because while the names aren't the sexiest with Indiana and Miami, and especially with the way, you know, Indiana's just not that team anyone looks at in college football, and Miami kind of squeaked into the playoffs, I think this is going to be a fun game with a chance of, like you said, Indiana just going out there and just blowing the doors off the place in Miami at their home field, which is going to be the best part.
It's a bigger chance that that Indiana blows out Miami than Miami blowing out Indiana. Yet I don't think either is going to blow it out. So there'll be something for us to chatter about.
We'll start getting into that. All right. Go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Thanks to Triple E, Laura, and Bailey as always. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.